welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, Calvin, I watched this interview last night. You are a very young guy. I don't know if you remember Senator Mitt Romney.
Oh, I'm familiar. Him running for president was one of the first times I was aware of politics.
Really? Really?
Yeah, it happened when I was a sophomore.
6 years old?
No, I was like 15.
Okay. So Mitt Romney, who is really anti-Trump, you know, he's not a guy who believes in Donald Trump. But I'm watching this interview with him the other day on MSNBC. And he brought up this wacko idea. And it sounds wacko to me, you know, it's probably not wacko to those who support Donald Trump. And it may be wacko, may not be wacko to you and the listening audience. But he said that Joe Biden should have pardoned Donald Trump. Did you hear that?
I had not heard that. That surprises me.
He said that Joe Biden should have pardoned Donald Trump and never allowed this trial, this hush money trial, to go on. If Biden would have been smart, he would have pardoned Donald Trump and not allowed this, you know, trial to go on. And at the root of it is because it's angered so many of the Trump supporters. This is what Mitt Romney was saying, and that by Joe Biden allowing this to go forward, we're going to get into how crazy this is. It's made it, you know, it's amped up the MAGA supporters, because, you know, they believe that Donald Trump is being mistreated. Senator, and this is in today's USA Today, Senator Mitt Romney, a vocal critic of Donald Trump, argued that President Joe Biden should have pardoned Trump on his federal charges and kept the Manhattan hush money case from moving forward. And this was in a new interview. In an interview with MSNBC's The 11th Hour Wednesday, Romney said if he had been Biden, he would have immediately pardoned Trump when the Justice Department brought forth its criminal indictments against the former president. Trump is facing two federal cases for allegedly mishandling classified documents and trying to overturn the 2020 election. I'd have pardoned President Trump. Why? Well, because it makes me President Biden, the big guy, the person I pardon, a little guy, he said. What?
You know, this is 3 years ago almost at this point. I had this idea. There was a time where I would have agreed with Mitt Romney, where optically I think Biden doing that would have made sense. But knowing what we know now and all the charges that have been brought against him, it's nonsense.
Yeah, man, it's clearly nonsense. Here's the part of this that I'm never going to understand, and I know, you know, I know the people who love Donald Trump, and, you know, they're just going to follow him off a cliff. If that's what it takes, they're going to follow him off a cliff. But, man, a guy who breaks the law, you might as well say that then for everybody who breaks the law. You know, I mean, I think to make one person special and above the law is ridiculous to me. Even if it is Donald Trump, And even if it is the fact that he's got, you know, an army of people who support him, just because he's got an army of people who support him doesn't mean that the laws that he broke, he should get a pass on. I mean, to me, that's crazy thinking. 844-967-2789. That's absolutely crazy thinking. Well, and I guess at the root of it is, well, you wouldn't have irritated the throngs of people who support him if you, you know, pardon him. Now, that's number one. That's what Mitt Romney says. But, you know, Joe Biden is the president of the United States, and he has no jurisdiction over the state laws that were broken. Donald Trump is not being tried on a state level. I mean, on a federal level. He's being tried on the state level. 844-967-2789 is the number. Trump is also facing a case in Georgia for allegedly trying to overturn the 2020 election, and one in New York for allegedly falsifying business records to cover up hush money payments. So let me ask you, for those who think that this would have been the proper way to handle it, on all these 91 different cases that he's up against, should they just pardon him for all of those because the throngs of people who support him don't think this is the right thing to do? Let's go to Don from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Don. How you doing?
Pretty good, Earl. Quick comment. You know why this Romney says this? Because he's afraid. They want to keep the public. They don't want that. They know what a slime ball that this orange turd is, and all the crimes. This way, this exposed to the people, and he's afraid the Republican Party is going to get a kick in the rear end at election time. That's my comment.
Hey, Don, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. You know, at the root of it is right and wrong. It's as simple as that. You know, right and wrong. So Donald Trump committed these crimes. There's no question about it. They're not even arguing about whether or not he committed these things. What they're saying is because he's got throngs of people who support him, and they're afraid of what those people are going to do or say, you know, that's why they think he should be pardoned. And by that standard, why do we even have laws? You're going to make his people angry. Who gives a rip? You know, there are a lot of people lined up right now wearing, you know, Donald Trump red ties, many politricksters, conservative politricksters, who want to be Donald Trump's vice president. And they're all, you know, there. And they're all out mugging for cameras. And they're saying, poor Donald Trump, he's being persecuted. Do you have any idea of to say that Donald Trump is being persecuted? There's so many people who have been persecuted in this country, who continue to be persecuted in this country, and to use that verbiage for Donald Trump is, you know, I think people apparently don't understand what persecution stands for, the definition of it. No way is Donald Trump being persecuted. Donald Trump has been able to mobilize people, unlike probably many people publicly in this nation's history. And they're going to follow him. It doesn't matter. They're going to continue to follow him, even if he loses, they're going to follow him. How do we improve our nation? By acquiescing to things that aren't right. I don't know how that's even possible. But we're on the precipice of that. Acquiescing to people who are angry because the person, their guy, is being exposed for what people have always known he was from the beginning. That's not persecution. When you commit the crimes and you break the law, that's not being persecuted. If you didn't commit a crime and you are being charged with a crime that you didn't commit, that now you're being persecuted. Maybe, the definition of the word persecution has been changed and swapped out, just like, the verbiage of woke. They changed the definition of those words. But Donald Trump clearly is not being persecuted. 844-967-2789. And Mitt Romney is 100% in error. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. On this date, 70 years ago, the Supreme Court decision outlawing segregation in public schools was rendered. On May 17th, 1954, the United States Supreme Court issued its landmark Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka ruling, which declared that racially segregated public schools were inherently unequal. Let me give you a little background on why, my life and my generation was impacted by that decision. I went to a segregated grade school. I lived in a segregated community, as so many of us did back in those days. And it was an all-black school. Everybody in the school was black. The teachers, the principal, everybody. I lived in a basically segregated community in Milwaukee, not in the South, in the North. And so, you know, I didn't know any different, as I'm sure many who lived on the other side of that coin, who lived in all white communities and had all white schools. And so that hasn't, that was not a good thing. And so because they were separate, but unequal, the educational systems were, and the United States Supreme Court rendered a decision. At that point in time, all the justices were white men who, when they made this decision, were met with fallout. It took a lot of courage for those justices, and let me give you their names. Felix Frankfurter, Hugo Black, Chief Justice Earl Warren, Justices Stanley Reed, William O. Douglas, Justice Tom Clark, Robert H. Jackson, Harold H. Burton, and Sherman Milton made a landmark decision that shook the foundation of the educational systems in the United States and forever changed the trajectory of our nation and the educational system. So, again, as a young boy, I was, you know, locked into, like many others, a reality that only included people of color. In 1968, I believe it was, you know, a decision was rendered that opened up, you know, opportunities for segregated schooling, especially in the city of Milwaukee and in urban centers across the nation, to change. And so I went from an all-black reality from kindergarten through sixth grade. By the time the seventh grade rolled around for me, I went to a 99% white school and white reality. Now, try to envision that. Everything was all black for me from kindergarten through sixth grade. And just from June, when we graduated grade school, to now September, my whole reality changed because open housing changed in the city of Milwaukee, and my father was able to move us into a different community, a different reality. And so I wound up going to a 99% white school. One of a few blacks who at that point in time got to see a different segment of the world, a different segment of society. And let me tell you why that was important to me in my life and my development as a human being. Not just development as a black young boy, but my development as a human being. I got to see a different side of life that those before me never got a chance to see. The high school I graduated from, 96% white, and Jewish. A black kid from an all-black reality now who was put into a completely different segment and a different reality. 844-967-2789 is the number. I'm going to continue this conversation on the other side because it coincides again with Brown versus the Board of Education and where we are today, 70 years later. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. 70 years ago today, Brown versus the Board of Education decision was rendered by the United States Supreme Court. And so, you know, Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka was a landmark 1954 Supreme Court case in which the justices ruled unanimously that racial segregation of children in public schools was unconstitutional. Brown versus the Board of Education was one of the cornerstones of the civil rights movement and helped establish the precedent that separate but equal education and other services were not, in fact, equal at all. One more paragraph before I go to the phone lines. This is important. Separate but equal doctrine. In 1896, Supreme Court ruled in Plessy versus Ferguson that racially segregated public facilities were legal so long as the facilities of black people and whites were equal. The ruling constitutionally sanctioned laws barring African Americans from sharing the same buses, schools, and other public facilities as whites, known as Jim Crow laws, and established a separate but equal doctrine that would stand for the next six decades. Now, one of the reasons that I'm, you know, it's out here and it's 70 years later, but I would say that segregated schools, public schools, exist today. Clearly in Milwaukee public schools and other urban schools across this nation, these schools are segregated. Let's go to Cassandra in Madison. Good morning, Chief Cassandra. How you doing? Thank you for the call. Your thoughts?
Hi, Earl. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I have been reading a few articles on the Brown ruling. And what really intrigues me as an educator is the mass layoff of Black teachers after the Brown ruling. Before Brown, there were around 90,000 Black educators. And then after the court ruling, that the number of Black teachers was reduced to around 40,000. So we lost 50% of Black educators after the Brown ruling. And what really the question before us today is this. We know the research has shown that when Black children have exposure to a Black teacher during the K-12 years, they are more likely to complete and receive a high school diploma, and they are more likely to attend and complete college as well. So that research is quite conclusive. However, we have laws on the books that prevent us from hiring Black teachers because, you know, it's considered reverse discrimination against whites. And this is where I fought our civil rights leaders. And that is, there has to be an innovative way of getting more Black educators in the classroom, or in my opinion, redrawing the district lines, one in which the Black community could take control of their neighborhood schools and employ the teachers that they need to educate the children so they receive the skills that they need to be successful. Because the current system, it's just not working for some students, not for all, but there are some Black communities, particularly in the urban areas, where they're not receiving the funding. The teachers who are coming into those schools, they don't have the skills to teach those students. Many of them, many of those teachers, they really don't have the passion or the calling to teach them. Many of them, they are just there to gain experience and then to move on to another school district. So
Cassandra, let me say this to you, because it's very interesting what you just said, because one of the things that happened once I left the all Black reality from kindergarten to sixth grade, where I had all Black teachers, and I wound up going to, again, over 95% white reality, I didn't get the same kind of, you know, education, because the teachers in the predominantly white school that I went to did not take it as personally as those Black teachers who knew the history of our nation and the importance of Black children being educated more so, and they took that upon themselves. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, you know, I can't say with a broad stroke that all white teachers.
I didn't say all, and I'm not trying to get you to say all. I'm talking about my experience in my life, and we're talking about 1969, and we were still coming out of civil rights struggles at that point in time. But go ahead.
Yes. Well, I wasn't in school during.
May have not been born. I know, but go ahead.
What I will say is this, as an educator, from my experience as an African-American female, I have found, you know, I teach at the college level, and I cannot tell you how many black students and even Latino students, after class or after the course, they will walk up to me and say, if you had not been my teacher, I don't think I would have passed this class. And I says, well, I often tell them, well, I'm very glad that I was able to be here to provide you with that motivation to continue and to let you know that you really can do it and you belong in college. And so those are the messages that are sent out to students of color, that you're here only because of your race. You're not here because you are actually qualified and that you can compete with everyone else. And when the students leave my classroom, and I am a very demanding grader as well, they know that they can actually compete with their white peers and that they can do quality work. So I, as I stated before, there has to be a way to get more black educators into the classroom and have them take over the curriculum and really reach the students where they are.
So let me,
I don't have all the answers on how to do that.
So let me, Cassandra, let me ask you, because again, Brown versus the Board of Education wanted to end segregated education at the root of it. That's what it was, because education was segregated. And now, you know, you are saying, and rightfully so, I spent 12 years in the public schools, rightfully so, that there's a lack of teachers of color in urban schools all over the nation. And so you are saying we need more people of color, educators of color in those schools, which kind of takes us back to why Brown versus Board of Education was created in the first place, to, you know, not have segregated schools.
Well, you know what, Earl? Here is what I want to challenge you, and perhaps other callers can pick up on this. We never fully desegregated.
That's true.
If you read the Brown ruling, there was a poison pill in that case. It said that the country would desegregate with all due deliberate speed. In other words, the court gave the school districts and many times whites, the ability to drag their feet in integrating the schools and the teaching force. So the promise of Brown has not been fully potentialized, because we are still under that mandate of all deliberate speed.
And not only has it not been realized, we're kind of reverting back to that. We have segregated schools, public schools, and that's what we weren't talking about. Private schools, they're talking about public schools. And if you move around this nation, that's the reality. Segregated schools are the order of the day. And in this instance, though, the segregated schools are based on the fact that people who live in communities that are segregated, especially in a state like Wisconsin, you can't get away from the segregated schools because of the sheer numbers of whites as opposed to blacks.
It's true. And you know what, Earl, what I find really interesting, I don't know if you read this report about the state of Louisiana. There is a school district, I think it was near the New Orleans area, the Supreme Court granted them permission to leave the urban school district and create their own new village. And the reason why that was done was because the whites, it was Baton Rouge. The whites in Baton Rouge wanted their own school district. And so what that happened, so the consequence of that means that the blacks left in the district in Baton Rouge, they are going to be poorer and they're not going to have the resources. And I think this was a test case. We're going to see more of that. We're going to see more whites who are adjacent to these urban centers. They are going to want to some way move out and take their funds with them. They were able to do it by purchasing property. Now, because everyone is so mobile, they're going to find other ways to take their money.
Hey, Professor, thank you. Thank you very much for the education this morning. 844-967-2789 is the number. Sharky, hang on. 844-967-2789. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. Final minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And yeah, 70 years ago today, Brown versus the Board of Education came down. And, I was a baby. I was born in 1954. And actually, I was not yet born because it was May 17th. I was born June 21st. When this decision came down. But I will honestly tell you, I wouldn't change my experience for anything in the world to have lived and in the climate that I lived in, going to, from an all black reality at what, 12 years old? To an all-white one, helped shape who I am today. And I don't think I could be here sitting before you having the conversations that I have had I not gone through that experience. It transformed who I am today, and I think it's critically important that what they were trying to make happen with Brown versus the Board of Education become a reality. Tony says, Wisconsin is changing funding public schools from state to local funding has exacerbated the problem too. Let's go to Sharky from Racine. Good morning to you, my friend. How you doing, man?
Man, good to hear you, Mr.
It's good
Ingram.
To hear your voice, man.
Yeah, likewise. And that was an interesting phone call. And I mean, here today, I just want you to know that in 1966, I was in second grade school at Walter Allen, and shortly thereafter, I lost my parents, and I was brought to the city, or actually the county of Racine on the north end. I was lucky to have an aunt and uncle to bring me through, and at that time, I was really a wet mess, but they were there working me on the farm, and one of the neatest things that happened for me in my world was my first employer unofficially was a black man with a beautiful family. His name was Brian and his beautiful wife. And they taught me how to work in construction at a very early age. and they treated me fine. They were good to me. They paid us well, as other friends in the neighborhood. And we all lived together. We loved each other's homes. We traversed back and forth. And the actual father was an attorney for NAACP. And I learned a lot from him. He sat me down many, many times. His wife sat me down many, many times. And Brian, he was a couple years younger. There was every Saturday, Brian was at our kitchen table on the farm. And that whole segment, I didn't know what I was even doing, alone having people of a different color. I didn't know what that meant. I do now. And now my professional former and the current, I never see color. And I'm glad about that. I made mistakes, but I really, really enjoyed the experience I had with that family and the family who brought me in, you know, near death. Seriously.
Hey, Sharky, man, thank you. Thank you very much for that story. It's the main reason why we can't do away with history, right? There are those who would probably say, we don't need to know anything about Brown versus the Board of Education. That was a long time ago. Well, you know, it was a long, 70 years is not so long ago. And as we see now, you know, we're certainly back at that juncture. Where we have segregated schools. And I don't know, you know, where that's going to ever change. If we have segregated schools and so young people don't get to meet other of contemporaries of theirs until they become adults, which is the way the system is set up now. And it's part of why we have such difficulties dealing with race in this nation. Because as young people, where we should be getting to know one another as we grow and progress, we don't have any connection at all with one another until we become adults. And then, you know, it's based on all the different things that we've heard, and not the things that we were able to experience. And so many of my friends from high school, I still, you know, white friends, I'm still connected with, and from even middle school. And it kind of helped shape who I am. Segregated schools is never good in the long run for the society or for individuals. Again, and that's from somebody whose life experience was that and shaped who I am today. Anyway, thank everybody who took the time out to listen as always. Thank you, Calvin, as always. You know, thank everybody who made the show go. Thanks for taking the time out to listen. Enjoy what is going to be a great, great weekend. Up next, Matt Nair on Air with Greg Bach. I will see you guys on Monday. And the first installment of the Patriotic Millionaires on the Earl Ingram Show. In the park.